Hey, besties.
Welcome to the BFF Bookcast.
We're your hosts, Teresa and Katie.
Before we jump in, we just want to remind everyone that what we discuss are our own thoughts and opinions. Just remember, we are here to have a good time.
And as always, please check trigger warnings before reading any books we will be discussing. And beware, we curse like the Bat Boys probably do during their annual snowball fight.
Hi, Corinne.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
It's a Thursday. It's late in the afternoon.
I know.
I kept thinking today was Friday too, so that was fun.
Same. And I work from home on Fridays, and I was in the office today, and I was like, oh, like tomorrow's Saturday. And it made no sense, but I still, if today has a Friday feel to it for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got asked by one of my clients to meet tomorrow, and internally, like, my attitude seeped out so big. I was like, who the frick do these people think they are asking me to meet on a Saturday? And then I was like, pulling up my calendar, I was like, you're an asshole. It's Thursday. They just want to meet on a normal business day.
I know. It's such a weird, I don't know why. Maybe it's the heat. I don't know. But
actually, we wanted to ask you because before we get into the book, it takes place like in Pennsylvania, and they are obviously in New York a lot, and there's like mentions of New Jersey. So are you from the area?
Yeah, I'm from Jersey. I grew up there.
Where?
Yeah, I grew up in Rockaway.
Oh my God. Okay, we're in New Jersey right now.
Where are you guys?
Right now we're in like near Woodbridge in Avenel.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Fairfield, so like Caldwell, that area.
So most of my family is in Bergen and Passaic County. Okay. So like I'm going to be up there. I leave tomorrow. I think that's why I think it's Friday, because I'm coming up to go see my grandparents. For Father's Day, because my whole family's still in Jersey. My sisters, my mom left, but my grandparents, my aunts, my uncles, everybody. So yeah, I like do a lot in the city in Jersey and talk about bagels and fight with everybody about Taylor ham versus pork roll. So yeah, it's just
I'm a Taylor ham girl. It's the North Jersey. It's Taylor Ham.
North Jersey.
Yeah. I know. And like my grandma, it was so funny. I had like some readers that were like real like. They were coming at me and actually there's another author and she's from Jersey and we always joke about it and stuff. And I was like, go ahead and call my grandma and tell her that it's pork roll. I dare you. And they're like, okay. I'm like, you're not going to fight with her. I promise.
It's so funny because like depending upon where you're from, everyone has that same exact comment. Like you can fight me all you want, but this is, it's just like the Central Jersey thing. Cause I say I'm from Central Jersey.
Yeah.
People don't believe in Central Jersey. And I'm like, no, it's real.
I didn't believe it till
my husband's from Central Jersey. So yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't believe it till I moved here. Now I'm like, oh no, I am. I live in Central Jersey now.
Yeah.
I know. And it's like the weird thing, right? Like Central Jersey like splits too. It's like you either go like more New York or more Philly, and it can be a pretty dividing line.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And yeah, I'm like, I'm an elitist like North Jersey. I'm like, ew, Philly, like South Jersey.
Same. I'm like the Yankees, Giants, like don't come at me with your Philly stuff, but
I will say that I think that's true for most Central Jersey people also, because like we are not Philly based people. But I love when like the west side of New Jersey thinks that they're central, like you guys are just west.
Yes. I like part of Philly. Just stay over there.
We don't want you, no offense. But you're good. just hang out over
there. You're essentially Pennsylvania.
You don't go here.
You don't sound like us. They say
home phone.
I'm like, no. Unless you sound like dog, coffee, and water, don't come talk to me.
Exactly.
Just insulting everyone on the podcast.
I just want to laugh because we we're very friendly with like Morgan Elizabeth and we had her on a few weeks ago, another Jersey girl, obviously. And I was like, every time we get someone from like New Jersey on, it always comes back around to talking about New Jersey.
Yeah. I was going to share it. It was a reel that literally like showed up on my FYP and I'm like scrolling at like 1 o'clock in the morning or whatever. And it was like, people from Jersey are just the best. And I was like, thank you. I was like, we're special.
We really are. And we were like saying too, like, if I can talk shit about New Jersey, I want. But if you're not from here,
don't talk shit.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. 100%. Like, I can talk about all the things that I hate about it. And like, my husband and I are like, we will never fucking live in Jersey again, ever. Yeah. And yet, But, like, at the same time, like, if when I, like, my friends from New York or my friends from anywhere, and they're like, oh, fucking Jersey, I'm like, no.
Yeah, like, watch yourself.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can say it, but you can't. It's like siblings, right? Like, you can talk shit about your sibling, you can call them names, but somebody else better not step to your sibling.
I feel like, I honestly feel like you've been here from the beginning. This is everything that we have said, but.
Yeah.
It's such a Jersey thing. I moved out of state with my husband for a little while too. And it's so funny. It's like, if we did like a tour somewhere or we did whatever, of course, like people are like, where are you from? And we're like, well, we live in Myrtle Beach, but we're from New Jersey. Like you have to sneak that in the back end. And we used to say the same thing too. We're like, why would we ever move back to that shithole? Like it's so expensive. We hate it there. We're back.
Yeah. I really don't think I'll ever come back, but I'm there often to see my grandparents and like to see my aunts and my cousins and my sister. So like, I don't know, I guess that's why I don't like miss it at all, because I'm like, I mean, I'm going to be up there this weekend and then I'm like, oh, and then I have to be back again. So yeah.
I mean, I think I would have stayed in South Carolina had my husband not had a job opportunity come our way. I will say no one else wanted to move though. Which, like, so every vacation of ours became, well, we're flying home. And that got old really fast. But I feel like now maybe if we did it, things would be different.
Yeah.
Like, I think we'd probably plant some more, especially now that we have one daughter, we have another kid on the way. I'm like, once you start, like, incorporating kids into the mix and they start making friends and you start making friends with parents.
Yeah.
Probably would have stayed. But, yeah, we were like, 25 and 26 when we moved out. So we were like, well.
Yeah.
It's coming, so I guess we should just go back. But I guess enough about the state of New Jersey.
I guess. I guess we can move on for what we're here for. So, I think I just had a complete stroke. I was going to be like the Whitlock family, the final book in the series.
Yeah.
And we put everybody on the spot because we're like, you wrote it, so you do the synopsis, because I'm so bad at synopsises when we talk about them. So I'm like, you get the synopsis.
Oh, I have to give the synopsis of it?
Yeah.
Oh, this is great. It's the last book in the series.
Billionaire romance.
It's second chance marriage of convenience. And like, I think that the fun part about this one was that I had three books with Brinley, like as like this strong, broken little, we saw her as like the matriarchy basically of this group of idiot brothers, and you know, and then she's like, so now it was her time to shine. Yeah. And I think that's why I really was really glad that I saved her for the last book.
Yeah. I mean, I love a second chance romance. That's like my bread and butter. Same. So I was like living for it.
Who also doesn't love a marriage of convenience also. And I say, you know, we talk about this a lot, like billionaire romances. I feel like a lot of times when we're given a billionaire romance, they don't really need to be billionaires, right? Like, there's nothing that like stands out that are like, how are you a billionaire? Oh. You wrote a fucking bill. Like, I was like, I believe her.
Yeah, because
like,
he's like,
wrote a billionaire romance.
He's like, traveling. He owns multiple businesses. He's selling business. Yeah. He's buying in business.
I was like, this is the first, like, I would say true. There's been a couple out there. Yeah. But like, yours also was like, yes, girl, you wrote that well. Like,
yeah. I mean, he's, you know, and he's also comes from old money. So, like, you know, I think that's where his story really worked well, is that his family was like that old New York money that was like, you know, I just kept envisioning like the Kennedys and the Rockefellers and like the families that would have been like, this is your path and I don't give a shit what you want. And I think that that's why, you know, I think for him, like he really wanted to go out and make it on his own so he could tell his family to like eat a dick, basically.
Yeah. Love that. What I was going to say, something that I think is so funny in like these billionaire romances, and I was like, I cannot relate to Brinley at all, is she's like, oh, I don't want your money.
I want your money.
The way she was, like, that wasn't her.
No.
Like, I think, like, many of us would have been like, hey, like, yeah, sure, I can buy myself flowers, but you can buy me diamonds. And, you know, and I think that, like, that would be a thing. But, like, for her, it was like, this isn't about, like, the more she kept things, like, clear, the less she would feel like she was either A, bought.
It was so true to her character.
Yeah.
And when he was like helping with the like the farm and stuff, she was like very accepting of that because it was like helpful for the animals and it was like making lives better. But like for herself, she was like, no, like, and even when he tells her too, when he's like, you don't have to work, like you can just not work. And she's like, but I like working, like I like my business. And she was so proud of that.
Yeah.
And I think for her, it was a sense of like, this isn't going to last and I'm not going to put myself in a position where I'm screwed later on, you know? And I think for her, obviously her motives were very clear why she needed his help and his motives were very clear why he needed her help. And she was willing to do that for in service of others, but she's such a selfless character, like she really doesn't want for herself. She would go without for someone else, right? Like that's just who she is.
Yes, which is just very true, telling to like what she's doing for her father. I will say you wrote very like for contemporary. I feel like a good contemporary romance contains characters that are believable, right? Like you give good backstory. You like everything that we are speaking about Brynn makes sense for who she is as a character and what you've delivered over and over throughout the series. And even Crew, like it makes sense that he's a billionaire. You're right. Like Rockefeller and all those, like the Kennedys, like I feel like it holds so much more weight with a reader when you can truly deliver believable characters. And like you did, like I believed the story. Like I was like, right, this is happening.
Yeah.
Right. Because it's such a suspended sense of reality, right? Romance and just in general, like most stories, there's a fantastical element to it.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe them and you don't understand their motivations and you don't actually if you can't see why, even if you wouldn't do it, if you can't see why they are, then I feel like you're just not invested. You don't give a shit. Exactly. Like you're like, oh, that girl's dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like you were saying, like maybe you can't relate to all of like Brynn's antics and how selfless she is and like maybe not taking her husband's money.
Yeah.
Gold digger. But also like sign me up. Does he want to pay for my loans?
Right. Just a little bit.
Right.
But like you're saying, like, yes, but you could, with her as her character, it's believable.
Yes.
So you can understand it.
Right.
Which is,
yeah, you've given us so much of her that like we know that this is who she is. So it's like, it's not coming out of like left field for her. She's like so true to herself. Yeah. I mean, the whole like father storyline, I think also just added a lot of character depth to her too.
Agreed.
And getting like her side of things and, I mean, like, I was, like, found myself, like, rooting for him, too. Like, I wanted him to be a person and, like, kind of have this, like, second chance at life and...
And with his daughter. Yeah, like, make amends and make things right.
And even with, like, his brothers, like, I think that the dad had a lot of guilt over what he did to her mom and to their family as a whole.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I don't... Obviously, I didn't write in his POV, but, like, I have to kind of, like, think about the motivations for him and... I felt like he was a really broken man at a period of time and he's trying so hard to repair. And I think that that was something like for her, for Brynley, who's like, I can fix the world, is like, I can't leave him like hanging out to dry. That's just that's not who she was.
She also made the whole like marriage of convenience storyline a lot more believable with her like, wanting to help Crew like save his daughter and get her out of a bad position, which I feel like she would have succumbed to Crew anyway because obviously there was so much there, but it made like that whole like her jumping into a marriage very quickly believable when she was like, I have to help his daughter because I know what it's like to have a parent like
that. Like, I needed her to see herself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, herself at 4 years old, what that life looked like, which was very, very similar to what she was seeing for Layla. And she was just like, I can't live with myself if this girl suffers because I can't marry a billionaire kind of thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's where I think, like, when we talk about the money part of it, like, for her, it was not about money. It wasn't, it was about this little girl who she just watched for, you know, saw fall apart. And I don't think Brynley saves broken everything. You know what I mean? Like, she takes care of everything, the animals, that no one wants, that's who she is.
Her community, her people, everyone, that's... I also really liked what you did with Crew too. Like, I mean, obviously billionaires chip on their shoulder, but I think you kind of, to me with the whole Layla storyline and the mom as well, I think it brings to like such true issues where you do see such complications with the law today with gaining custody. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, obviously custody falls to the mother, right? Yeah. Like yes. That's very, very common, regardless of who you are, regardless of status with your money.
Yeah.
But I love that you gave, like, he was such a devoted father. And like, yeah. I don't know, like as like a parent, like it's just something like that's amazing to see. Cause so many people, especially on the male side, I think they're more of, they can be perceived more as providers than an actual father figure or someone involved. And that is not the case with Crew.
Oh,
like
no.
Crew would literally give every dime he had away.
Yeah. I think he said at one point, like I'd bankrupt myself if it meant, you know, he could help her.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, this whole series, there was a lot of single dads in this series and I wasn't purposeful. Believe me, I did not plan it. You know, like with Asher, same thing, right? Like Asher was the dad that I wished I'd had, right? Like he was co-parenting healthy relationship. He would do anything for his daughter. He would, you know, and the whole family, right? Like they surrounded themselves around Olivia and, yeah. you know, and would do anything for her. And then like I had Grady, who was a widow who's taking care of his son and he's an excellent father. Like he's willing to do what he needed to do. He was willing to move back to Sugarloaf, give up his naval career mm-hmm. in order to take care of his son and provide him with a better life. And so like for me, it was really funny because like same thing with Crew, like it was these I think it's very sexy when a man loves his children. Yeah.
I just said this to my husband last night. Like he was holding my daughter, like rocking her to sleep. He likes doing the put downs because then she cuddles into him. They get like their bonding yeah. moment. And he walked out. I mean, like I'm also 8 months pregnant. So like there's nothing, I don't feel sexy. Like there's nothing that I really want to do right now.
But, right.
Like, hot. That is fucking hot. He's like, no, yeah. my daughter. I'm like, yes. Yeah. You wanting to do bedtime, you wanting to put her down, like you wanting to be with her. Like if she cries, you're the first to run into the room and not just because I'm slow. Like he's there. Like I was like, yeah. that's so freaking sexy.
Yeah.
That's for me, right? Like my husband is an excellent father. My kids are now 21 and 19, but like.
You have a 21 year old and a 19 year old.
I do.
She looks like us.
I know.
I'm very young. I was a young mom. I was 21 when I had my son.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. Yeah.
I would have been his age. She is.
But yeah, I'm like, so I think like for me, my kids are older, obviously, and they're in college, but like even still, my daughter like runs to him when he comes home from work. Like she's home from college now. And like he got home this morning, he was on a business trip and he got home and my daughter was standing out on the ledge, like waiting for him. And I'm like, but she,
it's shoes. Hold on.
Like, at the same time, like how great that she has her daddy, right? Like that there's nothing that she won't do and that he wouldn't do for her. And I think that is like, I draw a lot of inspiration on what I have and what I didn't have, yeah. you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just think it's just something like important in today's society as well. Like there's so many people, like most income people have to have dual incomes, right?
Yeah.
Like, both parents are working, both parents are providers, but there's, I feel like a really nice fixation now on kind of shedding more light over those, the man,
yeah.
the father, stepfather, whoever you are,
yeah.
like if you're helping to raise, like I think there's just more awareness over that they too are a huge part of a lot of their children's lives. And I think that's yeah. just really wonderful to see.
Yeah.
I also think like there's been a lot of growth within that just in general. And I know this might sound dumb, but like think about like with the Kelsey brothers and the way that they express emotions and how many women find that sexy because yes. you know, there's this thing that like men have to be one way. And I hate the term cinnamon roll. I don't know why I don't like it. Like when they're like, he's such a cinnamon roll or a golden retriever. I'm like, he's just a really good guy. Like to me, like those, and I'm not saying it's like a derogatory thing, but like to me, it's almost like saying he's not a male or an alpha male because he actually has emotions and can be like these things. And I don't, I feel like that's what it should be, right? Yeah. Like men should have emotions and they should be allowed to express them. And then on the flip side of it, they should love their wives, their women, their girl, whatever, to to that level. Like, I don't think that that's a, isn't that what we all want, right? Like, don't we want a man that's going to, like, love us with their whole heart? So,
and I've had that conversation where I'm like, the manliest thing a man can do is talk about his feelings.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like, that is literally the manliest thing a man can do.
Yeah.
And, like, when I talk about it, I'm like, there's, like, this, like, weird, I know we're, like, getting off topic, but there is this, like, weird, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like, I mean, men are, like, looked down on if they're showing emotions.
Yes.
And they're like, well, be a man about it. But it's like, no, sharing your emotions and talking about your feelings and being open and communicative is actually so much sexier than being like, well, I'm like a tough guy.
And I don't speak or talk about anything.
Yeah, and I think like with romance books in general, a lot of women see these men. And like, yes, romance books like are not always obviously realistic.
Right.
But I think they give, especially like younger girls, probably like something to like look for that like, oh, yes. There are men who can be like, you know, a little bit more sensitive and like still like, you know, be a provider or be like whatever else you're looking for. Yeah. And like romance books get a lot of, like they get a bad reputation. Like, oh, you're reading romance. Like,
don't even get me started.
Yeah. Like I think that they really are like in a lot of ways, like really, I think they're beneficial for just people who are already in relationships. And I think they give a lot of like younger girls or even just women who like are looking for something, like something to aspire to find.
I tell my daughter, like, I write heroes that I'd want my daughter to date.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, look at Crew. Like, yes, you're a billionaire. I mean, I think when we think of billionaires, we're thinking of assholes who do whatever they want, who can get whatever they want. Like, sure, are there some of those out there? Absolutely. That you get all walks of life. But in
Crew's
situation, he can talk about his feelings. He's not afraid to admit, like, his love for his daughter and how he feels for Brinley. And I think that, it holds such volume. It's like, that's who wouldn't want that.
Take the billionaire completely out of it. Right. Like, wouldn't you want a man who would go to such lengths to make you happy? I mean, to save the football that you threw, like, it's not even about money, right? Like that's like, it was the care, like the fact that he loved her so much that he cared and kept things or bought things or did things. And it's not, to me, it's not always about the money. It's not about those things with Crew and Brinley. It was about the way that he loved her. Like the way that there was nothing that was.
He didn't hide it from it. Like even with even when the whole proposition came out, like, hey, let's do this for each other. He was like, yeah, let's do this for each other. But at the other day, like, I still love you. And like, I don't want this to end.
I was like, from the beginning, he sees her at the wedding. He's like, immediately so upfront about his feelings. And like, we said it before, she's the fixer and the one who takes care of everything and everybody and who's taking care of her. And then like Crew comes in and like, he's the one who's like taking care of her and he has her back. And it kind of like allows her to be more caring towards everybody else because now she has somebody who's worrying about her.
Even like the brother component too. Like I love that. Yes. Like two of the brothers were employees of his, but like, I think he handled that really professionally. That shows that it can happen in real life. Right.
Yeah.
But I really love that he did turn around in time to like, the brother is to ask for permission again. Cause like he was
wanting
not,
to marry
yeah,
her,
like
he right
wasn't
way.
Afraid to go back and be like, look, like, yes, this was rushed. Yes. There were some reasons behind it, but like at the end of the day, like I will do anything for your sister.
Yeah.
And the brothers are able to see that. And I think that's just, again, for all parties. Cause like, of course, like the big brother component, like, oh, big tough guy. Like,
yeah,
but in a protective way, but we can also be real men and realize like, hold up, this guy is really good for Brinley and like, more accepting. So I think
And at the end, they wanted her to be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just like, oh, well, they didn't do this the right way. It's not like that egotistical guy component. Like, I think there was just...
It was, like very nice and refreshing to read.
It had, like, good weight to it. Like, good... Like, you're saying, like, good men to look out for in life for anybody in general.
Yeah. And like I said, I think that, you know, there's this wave of younger readers, right? My daughter's friends are all readers and they all talk to me about like what they're reading and like, like all the girls in the sorority, like they are all reading different romance books. And like it is a crazy, you know, conversations that I have with them. And, you know, I want them to read those kind of books, and I'm not saying I have nothing against dark romance. I love dark romance, but like, I don't want them to think that that is what they should be dating. Like I'm like, read those books. You want to read anything you want, read. But you know, stalking's not really what you want when you're finding a mate. I'm just saying, it's just not. Let's like find the nice guys.
Let's call it as it is.
Yeah, those are nice escapes from reality. Yeah. But it's not something you should want to mold your relationship out. Correct.
And I will never yuck someone's yum. Cause like I said, I love dark romance. I read a lot. I read historical romance, and those are so toxic sometimes, like, because in the 1800s, right? Like that was the relationship, you touched a man and you were considered ruined. So like I don't have any problems with any of those. And I get why people love them. There's like a crazy aspect to it. It's why I love freaking, you know, murder mysteries and things like that. Right. So I think that those exist, but I also hope that, you know, there's really good men, and that there should be, like, let's set that as the mold that we want for our children, for our daughters, right?
I'm with you. Yeah. And even the men out there too, like, and I think it can go flip side too, right? Like, you're writing great female main characters as well. Like Brinley, who is so compassionate. Like, yeah. And I will say she does not, because I think there can be characters and people out there who kind of tend to, like, they cross that line to being a doormat, but that is not Brinley's case. I think she's got a strong voice. She has her head on her shoulder. She's very aware of what she wants and doesn't want.
Yeah.
She loves her small town. She's like, get over it if you don't like it. Get, like, this is what it is.
Yeah.
But I also have a heart that's huge, and I will help anywhere I can. And I think that's a big thing for people out there, whether you're a guy or a girl.
Yeah.
Right? Like, anybody in particular can look at that and be like, I think that's very admirable as well. Right? Yeah.
I agree. I never saw her as a doormat.
No, never.
And I don't, I mean, I just, to me, she was always just a really strong heroine who knew what she was willing to put up with, but also had been hurt significantly by men. So she was very, very, I don't know, like, hesitant. She was really afraid to put herself out there again because she really didn't want to get hurt again.
Yeah. And still was not afraid to communicate that, which, like, again, takes some guts, right? Like, who wants to admit that they've been burned enough that they're afraid to jump into bed with someone, not literally. And
Right.
But I mean, like, you don't want to just jump into this and, like, all of a sudden get burned again. But it takes a big person to recognize their feelings and still have the guts to be like, well, I'm going to be a little hesitant here. I'm not sure about this. And I'm still going to protect myself and keep my job and do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a good role model for anyone to look at.
As and well. I love that he gave her the space to allow her to figure it out.
Yes.
Like, he wasn't like, no. Like, that doesn't work for me. Like, he was like, okay, well, when you're ready, I'm right here.
Right. Yeah. He's like, I love you. I'm not leaving. Nothing you can do is going to make me leave. But, like, I will wait until you are at the same, like, point.
Right.
Yeah. And, like, because we're on the topic, we love a dedication, and I, like, highlighted the dedication.
Yeah, so did I.
This dedication has more highlights than I've even seen. I swear to God, it's the most
insane. I literally opened the book, and I was like, well, hot damn. Like, this is how we're going to start? Okay.
I was going to say, I'm like, it's so important. I'm just going to read it so that if somebody didn't read the dedication and they're listening, but it's to the women who put everyone before themselves and find some solace in reading. I hope this one reminds you that you're worthy of being someone else's priority because you're amazing. And, like, that is, like, this whole book.
Yes. That is your synopsis.
That's the synopsis of the book.
Yeah. No, I mean, honestly, like, I think women are 9 times out of 10 the ones that sacrifice for, you know, in a way that they put themselves last. Like, I know it's like, well, no, I have to do this for my kids. Like, no, I have to do this for the dogs. No, I have to do this for my husband. No, I have to do this for my mom. No, I have to do this for my grandparents. Like, everybody else comes before my needs.
And, like, it's so many other responsibilities. I'm with you. I think that's a very big female trait in general.
Yeah. And so I think that it's so easy to forget that you are worthy of being someone else's priority. And, like, it's okay to put yourself first too. Yeah. And I don't know. I think that I mean, God knows I do not do it well enough, but it's something I'm trying to.
It's not easy. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing at all.
Mm-mm.
And then it's always like, my therapist will always say to me, pick your battles, right? Like, pick and choose where you want to be selfless and pick and choose where you want to be selfish. And I'm like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Like, you're right. Like, but it's so true.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's hard to make that decision. And most of the time we will walk away from being selfish because we don't know any other way.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. 100%.
100%. So, okay. So you've, out of the four books, do you have like a favorite book? Do you have a favorite character, favorite couple? Is it hard to choose?
So like they're each very special to me in a different way. And when I go through, like, it usually takes me about like 3 or 4 months. Like once I'm in like a new series to be like, okay, that one was my favorite. Yeah. Like I could probably name my favorites out of all of my backlist series. This one's really difficult because I loved writing every single one of these books. Like I was saying this somewhere else. Like I normally have one book in a series that I could dump. Like in my head, like it's just like I didn't like something or it didn't feel right or it was a very difficult time in my life or like because when you're writing, you know, like I'm writing through real life. I have kids. I have a husband. I have like we're doing all these things. And, you know, so it's hard sometimes to like sit and just live in a world. And I didn't have that with this series. This series was really just a different writing experience for me. I had fun. I had a lot of fun. And so I don't know that I have a favorite. I have like favorite moments.
Okay.
I have favorite like traits, if that makes sense. Like, yeah. Like one of my favorite scenes will always be in Broken Dreams when she gets drunk in the bathtub. Like I will forever, like I will never, ever.
That's rent free in the mind.
It does. It lives rent free in my head. It is so something I would do, get drunk and go in the bathtub and drink wine. It is 100% a me move.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of people's move.
Yeah.
I was going to say. That's a relatable thing.
I will forever love In Tempting Promises, their banter. I like the sarcasm that I got to play with was just so fun.
Banter is like one of my favorite things in a book. I so live good. For it. Like yeah. Over anything else. I'm like, if there's good banter in a book, that like, that's it.
I loved the way they bicker is very much my life. It is very like that. I think Rowan and Charlotte are the closest to me and my husband that I've written in a long time.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
So like, I love that part, but then like, I loved watching Asher fall in love with Phoebe. And I loved him taking care of her when everything fell apart. Like I loved how he reacted to things and, I loved Olivia. I loved how their family, like, so it's like all the things, right, that made this series very special for me. And this one was like honestly, I loved it so much. So I don't know that like, maybe this is my favorite book. You know what I mean? Out of the four.
You sound so passionate about all of them.
Yeah.
I feel like it's like, this was probably a good, I'm like in my mind, I think of like a Christmas present, right? Like everything's amazing about it. Like you're excited to wrap it. You bought the present. You love the present. But like that final knot, like it's like you look at it and you're like, that is a perfectly wrapped present.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that was like this book. Like it tied everything up so beautifully.
Yeah.
It was like you envisioned it from the start. Like that's it's like there's nothing I would change. That's it. Boom. Mic drop. Like that's it.
And I had zero idea that this was going to be how the story shaped up when I started. Like I didn't know who Brinley was really good. At first I thought Brinley was gonna end up with Austin.
Okay.
So I thought it was going to be like a crossover with the Arrowwoods. And then like, I was like, oh, I don't know. Something doesn't feel right. Like, I don't know. And I would like talk to my friends and I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I can do this. And they're like, so don't do it, you know? And then I'm like, okay.
Well, okay. Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So then like, I'd write the next book and I'm like, I still have no fucking clue who this girl's going to be with.
It's so crazy. Like I'll say this to any single author. Like I'm a broken record, but like the way your minds can work and like how you write these stories, these characters and watch them develop, whether it's like what you intended or
not.
And then like, what the fuck, like, I just feel like that, like the creative aspect of your minds, it just blows me out of the water. I'm like so in awe over it. And like I don't have that kind of imagination.
Like, depending on who we're talking to, like some people like will
plot like they know
their entire
oh my gosh, yeah.
Their books. And then some people are like, I'm just kind of making it up as I go.
And I'm like, what?
Like, it's so funny. My, so I'm a pantser, hands down. Like I have no idea where I'm going. I know the tropes. I know their names. And I know, like, I usually know what the conflict is going to be, because otherwise, like, I'm just writing to write and I usually have to delete everything. But if I know, like, okay, this is what's going to happen and it's going to be, so then I have like I have an arc and I can be like, okay, so I need to get to here. And once I get here, then I can get to there. So like, I usually know that. But with, what I often do is I think I know what it's going to be. Like, here's a prime example. I don't know if you remember, it's like 100 books ago, but in Forbidden Hearts, mm-hmm. Asher and Brinley talk about this, what her reason that she had to get married for her dad. Remember, like, she has this conversation that Howie had contacted her and he's really pissed about it. And he's like, this is a bad idea. And she's like, he's sick. And I, like, I can't do this. He reached out to me. It's part of his steps. Like, this is, she was just like, this is who I am. Like, he's my dad. And this is how I'm going to handle it. Right. And then it's never mentioned again. And I didn't know why the hell I had that scene in there. I could not for the life of me figure it out. I was like, I just feel like that has to be in there. And so I left it in. And and then I'm like, it'll come back around somewhere probably, like when she has to tell her other brothers, like no clue. So when I got to Brinley's book, I was like, she needs a reason why she would do this. That's not just about him, because then once he got custody, then what, right? Like it had to be like, they both had to have a reason. And I was like, didn't I have something in there about a dad and the,
it's like, you left your own breadcrumb for yourself. Yes. Like, your future self was telling your past self, like, this is what you need to do.
This happens in every single series.
It's crazy.
It is something that, like, my editor, like, laughs hysterically about. Like, she's like, I don't know what's wrong with you or, like, how this happens. She's like, but, like, randomly you're like, hey, didn't I have, like, a scene where this happens? Oh, I can totally use that.
How your mind works then.
Yeah, I mean, and so I've learned to just trust it. If there's something that I'm like, this feels like it has to be in, I usually will leave it. And that's why when people are like, oh, is Austin getting a book? Oh, is that, like, I'm getting tons of emails. Like, is Olivia getting a book? Is Austin getting a book? Is this one getting a book? And I'm like, I don't know. Because
I was like, I kind of like want him. I want to know what situation he was in.
I can definitely tell you that's not happening. Like, that is not a thing for me.
I'm just so intrigued. I was just, like, so intrigued. I'm like, is he, like, in the mafia? Like, what is happening? Is he
okay, that's definitely not happening. I'm not writing my Sopranos life here.
That's how your brain goes. Oh,
the North Jersey Sopranos. I'm like, he's in the mafia.
I know. If you met him in a diner with a paper bag. But no, I'm learning to like leave things in a way that if I feel like, oh, I can use this again, I have it. And if I don't, it's, you know, you're not left unfulfilled, but it's just.
Yeah, exactly.
And not everybody needs their own story. Sometimes a side character should just be a side character.
Yes, stay on the side.
Like, we love them because they're a side character and like. Or dislike them because they're a side character, depending on what their motive is.
Right.
Yeah.
Not everybody needs their own story.
No.
I know. And that's...
Like, as a reader, like, you just don't want series to end. So you're just grasping for straws, which is... I get it. Been there, done that. But it's true. Like, sometimes, like, you don't fuck up a perfectly wrapped present, right? There's no need for anything else. Yeah. Like, it is what it is. You leave it alone. You move on. That's why it's so great.
Yeah, and I mean, I get it, and I appreciate that people want more in that world. Like, I had so many people that were like, I just kept waiting for, like, a random sibling to just pop up that we didn't know about. I was like, I don't know how I would have done that, but, I mean... I get it. Like, I didn't want to leave the Whitlocks either. I didn't want to leave the Arrowwoods. That's why I went back to Sugarloaf. Like, I was like, God, I really love Sugarloaf. And I just wanted to write another series there. And when Addie went there after the Rose Canyon series, it opened up a place for me. And I walked, I was like, okay, this is where we're going.
That's awesome.
So where are we going next?
So next we're going to Ember Falls.
Okay.
You heard about Ember Falls in the bonus scene, I believe, or maybe it's a blog. I can't remember where the hell I put things anymore. I'm sorry. it's somewhere in there. Brinley mentions that Arabelle needs to go to Ember Falls. And so that will happen later on, but we're going to go to Ember Falls before that.
Okay. I'm excited.
I'm so excited now.
So yeah, I'm like loving it. I'm almost done with book one. I should have been done with book one 3 weeks ago, but we're not talking about that. And
you didn't hear that.
Yeah, I'm living my best life here. And so yeah, I love the story. It's really fun to go to a new town, because like I love the idea of building new, and you know, it's a really cute, sweet romance that I love. So it's got the vibes that I am digging from the Whitlocks in that sense. Like I love this little bit lighter, little bit less death, and a little bit more laughs.
Perfect.
That's great.
My reader, I have so many readers that are, like, I had one that emailed me and she's like, I feel like you're going to make us pay for this. Like, I feel like you've been very generous this series, and next one, you're just going to rip the shit out of everybody's brain. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I thought that too. I really did. I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to trauma romance. And now I'm like, you know, I think I'm going to be, it's a little bit healthier for me right now.
You'll get back to it eventually if you feel like it.
Exactly.
I will. I don't think that I'll stop ever, but yeah.
So, like, when you're writing, like, I guess, like, what does, like, your day, like, look like? Do you, like, have to set aside time, or do you only kind of write when you're feeling, like, motivated to? Like, what, I guess, kind of gets you in that space?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I don't know. You know, it's really hard. Motivation is such a weird thing, right? Like, sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not. And I feel that way, like, with everything, right? Like, with working out, with eating, with every other freaking thing in life. Like, you're not always going to be motivated, but you have to be disciplined enough to do it. So sometimes for me, it's not about, like, being motivated. It's about having the... I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Fine. My daughter came home and my dogs are all going to be idiots. So sometimes I tried to text her. I'm like, on a podcast, please don't come in. But she clearly didn't care.
She's like, Mom, hush.
Whatever. Didn't see it. So yeah, I think like with, I'm not always motivated, right? And I'm not always ready to write, but I just don't have a choice.
Yeah.
I get that. It's your job. So I guess, like, you know, at the end of the day, you have to find time to sit down and do it. Just like I have to find time and deal with healthcare claims. So.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, when somebody asks me, like, where am I inspired by, you know, and like the crazy thing is it can be the dumbest things that you would never think are inspirational, or a story, or a friend of mine will tell me about something and I'm like, oh, I could totally, like, my mind will take it and twist it. Right? Like, it'll take it and it's like, oh, if this had happened. The biggest line that if I say into any of my editor, my beta readers, like anybody, or like if I say to them, like, wouldn't it be funny? They're like, oh God.
Here she goes.
Yeah. Like, they're like, oh shit. Because it's those lines that was my line on like almost all of my books. Like I remember, like, for Consolation, I was like, wouldn't it be funny if this was what it really was? And my friend was like, wouldn't it not? And then I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to do this. And she's like, oh, I'm pretty sure you're already doing it in your head. And I'm like, yep. And the same thing, like, could have been us. I was like, wouldn't it be funny if, like... And so anytime I say, like, wouldn't it be funny? I'm like, oh, this is
going to happen. It's already stewing, circulating. You have it, like, plot. It's like, I got to go.
It's going to happen. It's not going to be funny.
It's not going to be funny.
It's funny for me, though. I will tell you, like, I love when I write, like, a little bit of suspense, or I write, like, something that's, like, twisty, or, you know, when I was writing really, like, traumatic books and I knew that you all were going to hurt and I'd be, like, sitting here, like, like, it's coming.
I low-key love that though.
I know. Like you're like evil, like cackling yeah, like, in the background.
Like that's when they're like when authors kill characters, are they crying or are they sipping something with Satan? I'm like, no, I am Satan. Like I'm not sipping.
I am Satan
and I am laughing at your pain.
Right. Yeah. I mean you're not killing the main character. You're killing somebody who like
Yeah, can't... sometimes I'm not.
Yeah.
Sometimes
it does happen.
Hey. Whatever you guys are doing.
I mean, it gives a good story, right?
But that just like makes it feel more real. Like I like Katie's different than me. Like I love a book that's gonna make me want to like off myself. Because like I'm like not an emotional person whatsoever. Like I do not cry. I'm very like one note.
She really doesn't like she's not kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I don't think I've ever seen this girl shed a tear in 13 years.
And like so I like love books that like really like destroy me. I like had to start wearing a mouth guard because I clenched so hard. So I'm all for like kill whoever you want, like rip my heart out. I won't cry
Stomp
about
on it.
It yeah,
throw some
I,
dirt, maybe
I
some
like
spit.
Like the emotional turmoil that I feel like inside.
She's rare.
It's fun.
It is.
I would feel like as a writer, that's got to be a lot of fun. Like, you know you're going to cause chaos. Because, like, who doesn't love to cause, like, a little bit of chaos? But as a reader, because I don't know what's going to happen, and especially for someone like you where, like, it's like, this is Corinne we're speaking about. Like,
right, like, is this the end of her nice era?
Yeah,
right.
Like, is it like, there's some authors where, like, you get your turmoil, and I'm like, but it's so-and-so. So, like, everyone's going to be fine. But with you, it's like,
are they?
I don't really know if they're going to be fine.
No, I spoil things for her sometimes. Yes. I'll be like, listen, you have to read this book. I'm warning you that if this bad thing happens.
Yeah.
Just so you know.
Honestly, prepare. Kill people. Just don't kill the animals.
Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah. I don't think I could ever.
No.
I will never forget. There was an author. I think it was Serena Bowen. And she was like, I think I'm going to kill the dog. And I was like, kill the kid.
Kill.
Literally, like, she like screenshot it and she's like,
but no, I fully.
I was like, no, kill the kid, don't kill the dog. And she was like, oh my god, the things you say. I was like,
but there's so many people that feel the same way.
I think most people do. I don't know what it is like about like killing an animal that is just so different.
Yeah, it's I don't know that I like I have two dogs. I just don't think I could write it. I mean, I know I have two kids, and like that should be never. But I don't know. There's something about those. I just there's a distinction somewhere.
In real life, we're not condoning it.
No,
but in books, kill the kids.
I'm sure at some point when I was 21 or 19, I'm sure my mother probably wanted to off me too. So I mean,
oh, I know mine did.
My mom would have, actually, even at the age of 34, before our dog did pass, my mother probably would have sacrificed me for the dog, so.
Understandable.
I mean, there, yeah.
Yeah, she's like, yep.
I get it. My husband would feed me to an alligator to save the dog. Like, it's just.
It's the dog.
It's the dog. Like, those dogs are everything.
Yeah.
And if you don't have pets, you don't get it, but everybody who has pets understands.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. 110%.
I actually, this is Thanksgiving dinner conversation. My aunt is like obsessed with her dogs. And I was like, who are you going to, I was like, if you can only save the dogs or your two sons, who are you saving? And she was like, I don't know. I don't think you have to pick the dogs or your sons. And she was like, but they're all, she's like, but the dogs are my other sons. And I'm like, no, you have to pick Dylan and Tanner or the dogs. And she was like, well, I guess I have to pick Dylan and Tanner. Like she was mad about it.
Yes, if I must.
Yeah, if I have to. It's so true, though.
It is so true.
Yeah.
So at least we know, like, coming up in your future books, no dead animals.
I don't think that I have or would. I don't know. I mean, I never say never, unless it was, like, a part of the plot that was important to the plot, but not just for...
like, the gratuitous, like, sadness of it.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, I try not to do anything in a book that doesn't need
that. You write
with
purpose.
Yeah.
There's a purpose to your writing, which, again, appreciate that.
Yes.
Don't just, like, send some floof in there just to send some floof. Like, everything you do, I'm like, there's a reason. Something's happening.
Something's happening.
Something's coming.
You guys cut out again.
Oh, dang it. Sorry, can you hear us now?
Yeah, now I can. I was like, where'd they go?
We're having too much fun.
just kind of reiterate, like, you write with purpose, and, like, as a particularly for me, like, I enjoy a book that has, there's a reason that you're doing something.
Yes.
That's something that I very much like in a book. Personal preference.
No, and I can, like, circle back with, like, the Willow Creek Valley series. You know, there were five siblings and there's only four books. And I did not kill that character because I did not think it was necessary to the story of the family. I just knew I could not write his book and I needed to leave that world and I needed to move on. Yeah. And so I know that, like, a lot of readers were very disappointed that Alex doesn't get a book. But for me, I thought I was doing the right thing for my readers by not killing him just because I didn't want to write his book.
Yeah.
I really felt like I was doing the kind and the
you were doing the right thing for the story and what it needed.
Yeah. And I didn't think the siblings needed to go through the trauma of it. And I just had no reason to do it. Right. And I know a lot, like I said, I get emails all the time, like, what about Alex? And I'm like, he's just not a character for me. And I needed to leave Willow Creek Valley for my own mental health. So it was better.
And I would prefer, I think, more authors do that, where, like, you don't feel the pressure to have to give everybody a story or
give every, like, I mean, every reader's going to have different wants, right? But, like, you can't please everyone. So at the end of the day, like, I think as long as, like, you're kind of speaking true to who you are, saying, like, you're not just doing it just to do it.
Yeah.
But it's a really, really difficult, I will tell you, like, it is a very difficult place because, like, the amount of questions that we get and people ask, you know, it's hard. Like, I knew when I left Alex there that, like, even though I'd given him a HEA in every single way that I could, readers still wanted to know why and how, and I'm like, but I can't give you that. You know, and
I know that too about yourself, instead of just writing something that you're like, oh, I don't even like this and I don't want to do this, and, like, because then you're doing a disservice to the fans and to yourself too, when you're, like, kind of forcing a story. If it's not there, then, you know, it's not there.
Yeah. And I don't know. It would have been the worst book you'd ever read. Like, I knew that. I knew that if I was forced in some way to have to sit down and write it, either A, it would never come. I would never write it. Or B, it would be such absolute trash that everybody would have been angry anyway. So I was like, I'd rather you be angry at me and angry for not having something than angry because I wrote an abysmally terrible book.
Which speaks volumes.
Also, I appreciate that. So I guess, like, our final question, which I like to ask everybody because I like
actually,
to, like,
I have a question too.
Okay, sorry, you go.
Okay, you can go.
Oh, well, I was going to wrap it up. Do you?
Well, you know, I'm going to wrap it up too, but I just have a question.
No, mine is always, like, when you sit down to write, like, what is, like, your snack preference and your drink preference, like, while you're, like, really in the zone?
So I, like, always have my peach tea in my brewmate, always. I drink Crystal Lake peach tea like it's water, because I don't drink, like, and that's the only way I drink enough water.
Yeah.
And I don't snack when I write.
Okay.
That's got to be hard.
I guess. No.
I think I would focus too much on the snack.
Yeah, I like try not to have food in my office or anything that is,
like, distracting.
Yeah, and I mean, I used to, like, love having, like, M&Ms, and I would just, like, pop them. But then, you know, I gained 70 something pounds, and I was like, can't do this anymore. I have to really.
No more M&Ms.
I was like, we're not going to live like this anymore. So. So yeah, I just, I don't have snacks. And honestly, like, I like to take a break to eat, right? Like I need, if I eat at my desk, like, I don't feel like I'm always working. So it's kind of nice for me to not have food because then I have to leave my office too.
Yeah.
That's smart. Yeah. That's smart. Purpose. Do you have a ladder for that?
I do.
Okay, let's be honest here. Oh my God, look at these shelves. These are shelves from people's dreams, at least for mine. Please tell me you have a Belle moment and you, like, swing from that.
I have not because it's got a lock. Like, when you step on it, it locks.
Okay, fine.
So it's got brakes on it so that you can't go sliding all over the place.
I would be like, okay, well, I'm going to need 2 seconds. Be right back. You'd see me, like, fly across.
But my daughter is not heavy enough to activate the lock. So she does.
I love it.
I love that for her.
Yeah, she's.
we're going to need a video of this.
I know. She, like, loves it. She's like, do you need something off that top shelf? I'm like,
no. Let me just go fly over there. Oh, I'm God. Like, there's pour me a glass of wine and put me in your office and I'll have a good time.
She's like, I'll go up and get that for you. I'm like,
she's like perfectly walking up and like,
yes,
posing. I would actually probably be, we'd probably be in the ER. I would do something stupid and like pull myself off said ladder. But
okay, yeah, I mean, but we do need, like, it's crazy how much you need. Like, I didn't think at first it was really just for me to have a ladder.
I mean, I love it. It's necessary.
It's beautiful.
It's aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. Thank you. We want to, like, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we really appreciate, like, getting to meet you. Hopefully we'll meet you at like, some event. We don't have any planned to go to until next year. But if you're ever, like, doing a book event in New Jersey or New York, let us know, because we would, like, love to meet you in person.
Yeah. Oh, my God, for sure. Yeah. I'll definitely keep it. I'll let you know. I'm super excited that you guys had me on. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And thank you for reading. And thank you for being so sweet.
It's always the end.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. You're the sweetest. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And congrats on the new release. And we're so excited to see what you have coming next.
Awesome. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to receive notifications anytime a new episode drops.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at thebff.bookclub. If you have any comments, questions, book recommendations, or books you want us to talk about in future episodes, please send us an email at thebff.bookclub1@gmail.com.
We appreciate your support.
See you, fuckers.